This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A major fight over natural gas infrastructure has been brewing in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania for years. So far this year, 40 people have been arrested protesting the Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick has more.
The Atlantic Sunrise has angered people who say it infringes on private property rights and creates environmental problems. The pipeline is part of a broader network of new projects throughout the Northeast to connect natural gas production in Pennsylvania to new markets within the U.S. and abroad. In early 2017, after federal regulators approved the Atlantic Sunrise, protesters set up an encampment in southern Lancaster County. Hundreds of people pledged to use civil disobedience. Among them was Stephanie Graybill, a mother from Millersville, who had traveled to North Dakota last year to participate in the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline.
I think Standing Rock's the playbook for camps like ours, because we're tired of government pushing us around.
In a surprise move last summer, Williams, the company building the Atlantic Sunrise, bought the farm where the camp was being hosted. In mid-October, pipeline workers and protesters came face-to-face. As an excavator moved in to start work, police arrested 23 people who stood in the way. 86-year-old Barbara Van Horn was among those arrested that day. She says she's worried about how natural gas contributes to climate change.
I feel really frustrated with our courts and our government that they're giving in to these big paying, lying companies.
As protesters continue to plan events, Williams says it's committed to building the project in a safe manner. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
The Trump administration has announced it is reviewing an Obama-era rule that protects minors from exposure to coal dust, and that has some health and safety advocates concerned. As Benny Becker reports, the review comes amid a tide of regulatory rollbacks and at a time that black lung disease is on the rise.
In a statement, Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration Director David Zatezalo says the review is not an effort to weaken the rule. But the timing of the announcement makes some health and safety advocates unsure. The administration announced the review the same day that President Trump held a press conference to highlight how quickly his administration has been getting rid of government regulations.
For every one new regulation, we have eliminated 22.
The mine safety rule that's being reviewed just came into effect in 2016. It lowered the amount of dust that miners can be exposed to and also required more monitoring of dust conditions. Dr. Edward Petzonk oversaw the federal monitoring of dust diseases in miners from 1990 to 2009. He says that loosening this regulation would not help the current epidemic of severe black lung, which is already the worst in history.
To cut back now is to expect much more disease and suffering and death.
In 1970, striking miners won federal regulation to address the dusty conditions that cause black lung.
This type of disease was supposed to have been eradicated.
But black lung is still a major problem today. Last year, an Ohio Valley Resource and NPR investigation found over 1,000 cases of severe black lung disease. Federal researchers estimate around 5% of experienced working miners have the condition. Petzonk says the newly established limits on dust might not be strict enough.
The science suggested the dust levels should have been cut in half, but it was only cut 25%.
The other compromise, Petzonk says, was in how often miners have to wear dust monitors. He explained that when conditions get too dusty, even just for a moment, miners can suffer permanent lung damage.
The monitoring should be done continuously so that the miners know exactly whether they have a hazardous condition or not. That's really the best way to protect against this disease that is now ravaging coal miners throughout our region.
Murray Energy is the country's largest coal company, and it's headed by Bob Murray, who's a prominent ally of President Trump. In 2016, Murray Energy unsuccessfully sued the government in an effort to stop the rule. In a written statement, the company said it's pleased the rule is under review, and it believes the rule, quote, fails to protect miners in any way. Bill Rainey, president of the West Virginia Coal Association, said he hopes that any rule change will acknowledge new technologies and balance safety with cost.
What we got to do is keep the momentum going that President Trump and all his appointees have begun to initiate to try to rescue this industry.
Phil Smith is a spokesperson for the United Mine Workers of America. He says he thinks the rule is fine as is, and noted that keeping dust levels low prevents more than just black lung.
The respirable dust is also explosive.
The problem, he says, is that companies and the government aren't protecting miners from dust the way the law requires.
this is going to happen when you have operators that aren't willing to follow the law and a government that's not willing to enforce it.
The text of the respirable coal dust rule calls for a review to occur. Health advocates will be watching for signs that the review might become a rollback of dust control measures. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Benny Becker in Whitesburg, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Partly cloudy skies today with highs in the 40s, partly cloudy tonight, lows in the 20s and 30s, and sunshine tomorrow with highs in the 50s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Lumos Networks, providing next-generation communication solutions over an expanding fiber optics network. More information at lumosnetworks.com. With looming budget cuts threatening jobs, employees at the Environmental Protection Agency have something else to worry about. The New York Times reports a private agency is investigating EPA employees who criticize their own agency. State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips reports at least one worker in the Philadelphia office faced scrutiny of his emails.
When Gary Martin protested proposed EPA budget cuts during his lunch hour last March, he didn't think it would lead to a Freedom of Information request regarding his emails.
This is a George Orwell-type state.
America Rising, a Republican opposition research group that specializes in digging up dirt on candidates, used the Freedom of Information Act to seek emails between Martin and Democratic Senator Bob Casey. Morton says it was a fishing expedition that turned up nothing. Morton is the union president for AFGE Local 3631, which represents EPA employees in the Philadelphia region. Like all federal workers, he is forbidden by the Hatch Act from doing any kind of political work on government computers or government time.
So this was an attempt to find out if I had violated that act so I could be brought up on charges. It was retaliation, I believe, for my union activities.
Morton works to enforce federal regulations on underground storage tanks. His colleague, Jan Nation, is the shop steward in Philadelphia and works as a paralegal. Nation has worked for the EPA for almost 30 years. She says she's never seen this level of scrutiny of EPA employees.
So we're all kind of looking over our shoulders here and wondering what rights are suddenly being taken away from us, or if we do exercise our rights, will there be consequences?
Neither the EPA nor the group that filed the FOIA returned requests for comment. Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
If you ask teenagers or college students in West Virginia, chances are many of them will say they believe that to find success, you have to leave the state. But there are a group of young people who've decided to put down roots and find a way to stay. Two of these young people are J.D. and Jenna Belcher. They both grew up in McDowell County, West Virginia. Roxy Todd recently visited with them to hear more about why they decided to stay put and how they found a way to remain here.
J.D. Belcher is a former coal miner from McDowell County, a community that's usually in the national news for high rates of addiction, poverty, and unemployment. And while there are grim statistics here, 36% of residents are living in poverty, J.D. Belcher says it's still the place he wants to be.
Coming out of high school, I didn't really, you know, like all of us, I didn't really know what to do. So I enrolled in college and tried that out for a few weeks and decided it wasn't for me. So I dropped out my first semester and then I said, well, I'll go back next semester and we'll try it out. Maybe I'll switch majors and we'll see what we can do. And that lasted a few more weeks than the first semester, so I dropped out again.
From there, he began studying to become an electrician, but then a job came his way, transporting coal across southern West Virginia for a company called, at the time, Massey Energy. But then, when the coal industry began to take a downturn, he was laid off. Eventually, he got a job working for Bluestone Coal in Wyoming County. It's just across the border from his home county of McDowell.
I got on there and spent the next 7 years of my life as a strip miner, heavy equipment operator. And eventually, I just wanted to, you know, I've always been very creative. I've been in bands. I've, you know, sculpted. I've drew things. I've always done something creative. And I just eventually got into wanting to learn how to make a zombie film. So how do I do that? I asked myself, and I just started learning everything I could, and it just kind of had a snowball effect. And eventually I learned so much that there was a position for a production editor in the local area. And I took a 50% pay cut and a huge decrease in insurance to take a chance and do it in the productive world.
This new job was at an advertising agency, about an hour from JD's home. After a few years making commercials with them, he started getting side jobs filming weddings. Last year, he decided he was making enough money at his own video business that he could quit his full-time gig at the ad agency and work as his own boss. He and his wife, Jenna, now own two multimedia businesses together.
Thankfully, we've had a very lucky first year, and things are looking really good, and I get to be my own boss and do what I love for a living. So, you know, so far so good, and we'll just see how it goes. But that's where we're at now, basically.
JD says he still keeps in touch with several of his old coworkers at the surface mine. Although many of them were laid off for several months a few years ago, he says most of them are back to work now at Bluestone Coal. Still, he feels happier now that he's making videos, many of which are about his home of McDowell County. He was recently contracted by the McDowell County Visitors Bureau to produce a video and a website called Meet McDowell to help promote the area's bed and breakfast and local restaurants.
And it was basically more of a love letter to my home, you know. No matter how much you knew McDowell County, we wanted everyone that visited the site or watched the film to find something that they never knew existed. And we definitely had that experience, too. I think there's close to 20 lodges in McDowell County that you can stay at. I had no clue. There's close to 20 restaurants. There's so many recreational activities to do, you know, especially with the four-wheelers, as we all know. But there's really a lot of people that are being highly successful and just are at that level from just word of mouth. So we thought, you know, if we can all get behind a certain campaign for the entire county and just to show these business owners we have their back, like, the sky's the limit. So it's definitely had a great response so far, and people seem to be really enjoying, you know, the positive energy that it's created.
JD's wife, Jenna Belcher, is a former banker who now works for an economic development nonprofit called Coalfield Development Corporation, which recently expanded into McDowell. Because of the sense of connectedness she feels here, she says she could never see herself being as happy if they were raising their daughter anywhere outside of southern West Virginia.
She's three, but we don't ever want to take her out of a situation where we stop at the gas station and know five people that are there, or three people, you know, hold the door open for us when we walk through and use their manners, and we know, you know, the grandparents of and grand, you know, great-grandchildren that and people that I grew up with, their children that our daughter can grow up around. And I don't think that we would want to raise her anywhere else. We don't want her to think that, you know, that by any means it was easy to stay here for us, because I'm sure with JD's talent, you know, we could have gone somewhere and probably made, you know, three times as much as he's making now. But my family is invested here. Our family is invested here. We've been very blessed with the economic situation in McDowell County. You know, we were able to grow two small businesses. I was able to get a college education. We've been comfortable, and, you know, we've been very lucky here. And I don't think that we would want to raise her anywhere else.
That was Jenna Belcher and her husband, JD, speaking with Roxy Todd in Kimball, West Virginia. You can watch JD's video about McDowell County on our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Mornings is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.